In Module 2, Marshall Linehan and Ron Siegel touched on the specific situation where the other person might actually be to blame for the client's problem. And this can be a really difficult issue, especially if the object of blame has no real intention of changing. So how do we approach this? One way, as we've heard earlier, could be to help the client change something about their reaction to the other person's behavior. So let's unpack this a little bit more. How can we help clients make some minor tweaks that could help them to struggle less with blame?
I think there are ways also to have one person change and change the other person. And what I tell them is we're all connected and we're all in patterns. And if you change your part of the pattern, you can change their part of the pattern. Now, it doesn't always work on first try. So I tell them, look, think about other people who interact with that person and get a different response from them than you do. You know, just model on some other people.
Helping the client model how other people work with the person that they're blaming could be an effective way to promote change. And it's also the first thing that Bill suggests when he runs into this issue.
Maybe you can change that person. Maybe you can change your boss. Maybe there's somebody else at work that deals with him in a little different way or thinks of him in a little different way. And sometimes I'll say, go interview that person, because you're seeing your boss as this critical person who hates you. And he seems to interact with other people the same way, but it doesn't get to them in the same way. Go ask him why not. Like, oh, I just think he's in a bad marriage and I just give him a break. I just let it roll off my back. I don't take it personally. I was taking it personally, like he was attacking me. That's an interesting way to talk about it. So I try and find from other people, how do they think about it? What are their theories about it? And what are their action patterns? And see if I can model on any of that stuff.
It can be so easy for the client to take things personally in these cases, especially if they see themselves as being singled out. And that's why Bill's interview and modeling process can be so valuable. It can bring in an additional perspective that the client might not have even considered. If a client can take in other people's experience with this person, including how they think and act toward them, it could help the client shift out of a stagnant blame pattern.
Now, there's a silly story that I use sometimes with this, and that is a couple who couldn't break up because they couldn't figure out the custody of the dog, but they were embittered with one another. And we had both of them at our center. We did kind of behind the mirror, sometimes supervision. We had the couple go home and use the dog as their role model. How does the dog get a better response from this person than you do? The dog persists, the dog doesn't take it personally, and they just both studied the dog because they love the dog a lot. But you can do that with other people too. How does their best friend get a response from? How does your daughter get a response from her or him that you don't get? And you won't be the same as that person, but you can sometimes use little bits of their behavior, their ways of interacting, to be a role model.
Okay, so let's just walk this back a little bit now and focus on the action-reaction part of the process, the interpersonal relationship itself. Sometimes when there's reciprocal anger and blame between two people, it could be helpful for the client to ask themselves one vital question.
How do I always behave with this person in response to this person? And how can I change my part of the pattern? Do something slightly different or radically different. And so, sometimes people are like, well, but he's wrong or she's wrong. And I go, well, would you rather be right or would you rather get results? I'm here to coach you and get results. I know it may be that person and it's all them, but sometimes being right is the booby prize. And what you want is to have a better time at work. So give up being right and just start to experiment. Ralph Waldo Emerson said years ago, all life is an experiment. The more experiments you do, the better. And so I think sometimes people have stopped experimenting to find out if something else works with this person that they're having problems with.
This sounds so simple, but it could be the very thing that helps bring about change. Help the client to change their part of the pattern and it could lead to positive results. Now, there's no question that this can be a tough sell. We want to be right, especially when we know we're right. But as Bill said, sometimes being right is the best way to lose the game. All right, let's go at this from another angle. Let's say the person being blamed just will not change their behavior. One approach that could be helpful would be to take action and change the context in which that behavior occurs.
And I think of, a story that a guy I knew told me. He said when he was a kid, 4 years old, 3 years old, I think, maybe two. I don't know. He was a toddler in some way. And his father got a new job, and it was delivering milk. And his father brought the truck home that he was going to use to leave at 5 in the morning on Monday when his new job started with, you know, he'd go and get the milk at the dairy and deliver it to people back in the days when they used to do this. And the kid got a ride in a couple times during the weekend. Then Monday morning, the kid comes out in his little diapers and he says, "Go truck." And his dad says, "Yeah, no, I gave you a ride this weekend. I can't now. I have to go to work." Kid says, "Go truck." And he starts to throw a tantrum. And then as the mother's watching from the kitchen and the father's watching from the seat of his truck, the kid just runs head first into the brick wall they have in their patio. Blood starts spurting out. Father jumps out. They get a towel. They put it on. Father has to go to work. Mother takes the kid to the doctor, gets him sewed up.
Okay, I think we can see the problematic behavior here and what needs to change. Now, if this was a one-time occurrence, it would be bad enough. But the same thing happened again between the father and son just a few days later. The father gets into his truck and his son decides that he wants to go for a ride. This time, however, the father changed one key part of his reaction and that made a difference.
Kid comes out and throws a tantrum, wants to go on the truck. And the father says, "I can't take you. I got to go to work." And the kid starts to rev up and the father just drives away and says, "It's your head." And that was that. The kid said, "They tell me that story as I was growing up. And I was so glad," he said, "it's your head, because the brick wall is there. You know, you're going to hit it." And so when I'm dealing with people that they're with somebody who's drinking or doing drugs, you can't directly tell them stop that because it won't work. I mean, you tried already to do what you need to do it. But you can sometimes help them take the consequences of their own behavior and get out of the way so you don't buffer them from the consequences so they run into their own brick walls.
As Bill said, issues of substance abuse could be one scenario where this technique might be helpful. Dr. Joan Borisenko found this to be true when she was developing a mindfulness program at a local treatment center.
Generally speaking, they have to hit the brick wall that Bill was talking about in his really very charming way. They have to hit a brick wall before they can finally say, "If I keep this up, I'm going to kill myself or somebody else. This is not going to work for me." And it's always something, you know, one kid finally faced up to his addiction, God, multiple addictions, to booze, to pills, to cocaine, to all kinds of things. When he called home to ask for more money and he said, "Well, you know, I'm in Seattle. I'm in Seattle. I'm stranded here. Send money." And finally, his parents said, "No, you'd have to find your way back yourself." And he said, "That was the turning point for me. I couldn't anymore get what I wanted, so I had to face up to circumstances." And if you hang around addicts long enough, you hear lots of stories about the brick walls they hit and how that induced change.
The way I think about it is, you can't change people directly all the time, but you can change the context in which the behavior occurs, and sometimes they get motivated to change.
Consequences can be a great motivator, and this technique can also give the client a small sense of control in situations where they might be feeling out of control. So now let's take a look at one more way that you can disrupt the blame cycle and bring about a change in the process.
And he would let me use the car. And at a certain point, the car broke down. And we sat down to figure out what happened. I assumed he was going to check the oil and fill up the oil. And he assumed I was going to check the oil because he was letting me use his car. And we realized that didn't work. So we decided to start a different model. And the different model was each of us would pretend we'd own the car totally on our own. And we'd do everything that we'd do if nobody else was taking care of the car. And we decided that 100% responsibility model was a much better one. The car didn't break down after that. Each one of us pretended we owned it alone.
This idea of taking full ownership of a problem can really move the needle. It can take away many of the issues that lead to blame and replace them with actionable strategies for avoiding future blame.
So I sometimes tell that story to people and I say, look, even if it's that other person, what about if you just assume it's 100% your responsibility to change this thing, to maintain it, to do something that shifts it? And even if that's not fair, you'll get a car that runs, or you get a marriage that runs, or you get a job that works, or you'll get a life that works in some way. So I like to give that analogy with people and convince them that even if it's not fair, it might work to pretend that you are 100% responsibility for change, for the change that you want to have happen.
Before we move on, let's just review the four strategies Bill will use to help his clients reduce blame and foster change in others. One, have the client try to model the way others interact with the person whom they're blaming. Two, have the client experiment with one change in the way that they typically react to the other person. This can be a slight or a radical change. Three, help the client try to change the context in which the other person's behavior occurs. And four, suggest the client pretend that they're 100% responsible for the problem. Okay, we've looked at several different ways to reverse the patterns of blame. These are strategies that can help clients be more effective in their interactions and achieve better results in their relationships. We're going to continue on with this track in the next module. Please join us in Module 5. We're going to get into ways to resolve the blame that poisons relationships. I'll see you there.